The library is for everyone, not just for people who don't like drag queens.
They show up and they have their way with your children in demon outfits.
The two main characters, Alice, also known as Al, and Juliana, a famous singer whose career Al is managing, are also lovers.
Marosa, you're the worst, but damn, I'm glad you came.
All across America, something is stirring.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Australia's PM Polka imperils equality prospects, kids check out diversity from library drag queens, and humor in history soothes Trump distress disorder. Those stories and more this week because you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Michael Lebeau.
And I'm Sarah Sweeney.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 25th, 2018. Australia has its sixth new prime minister in 11 years, and it marks a rightward shift for the already conservative government coalition led by the Liberal Party. Scott Morrison was promoted from treasurer to prime minister by his party on August 24th to replace Malcolm Turnbull, who consistently caught flak from some Liberal MPs for his more moderate positions on social issues. He saw the writing on the wall and stepped aside earlier in the day. Even more hardline right-wing lawmaker Peter Dutton had originally challenged Turnbull's leadership, but Morrison was seen as a more palatable choice in the narrow 45-40 party room vote. He's a Pentecostal Christian who strongly opposed marriage equality and favors religious liberty measures that would allow discrimination against LGBTQ people. During a brief stint as Home Affairs Minister, Morrison took harsh measures to prevent asylum seekers from living in the country, including a partnered gay Pakistani man. Unlike many other Western democracies, Australian voters elect a political party rather than the party's candidate for prime minister. This allows the ruling party to change prime ministers in midterm. Both parties have virtually admitted in recent years to changing prime ministers because of falling poll numbers ahead of a national election, and this week's shift was no exception. No sitting Australian prime minister of either major party has finished a full term in office since 2007. And as the expression goes, down under, many Australians who are required by law to vote have had a gutful complaining about a governing political party virtually nullifying their votes before the term ends for the person they think they elected. Some have taken to social media to lampoon the situation. As the Associated Press reported, one set up a tongue-in-cheek Twitter account that names Australia's prime minister with hourly updates. A popular meme circulated purporting to be a public service announcement. Remember Australia. Change of prime minister means change your smoke alarm battery.
This is Barry Mackay in Sydney. Prime Minister Scott Morrison is not predicted to last very long in office. There is talk of the Parliament holding a no-confidence vote in the government in 2 weeks' time when Parliament sits again. If that passes, then there will be an election in October, and it's very likely that the Conservative Liberal Party will get voted out. Former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull is resigning from Parliament, and there will be a by-election in his electorate. Former Prime Minister Tony Abbott's lesbian sister Christine Forster may stand as the Liberal Party candidate in Malcolm Turnbull's former electorate. However, if the Liberal Party fails to hold the seat, they lose their one-seat majority in Parliament, and the government again could be at risk of holding onto power if they do not get support from the crossbenchers. If all goes well, then the next federal election has to happen by May next year. The general feeling is that as the Australian public is sick of a constant revolving door of prime ministers and disunity in the Liberal Party, that the Labor Party are likely to take power again. Labor Party leader Bill Shorten was very vocal in his support for marriage equality during the campaigning last year.
This is Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia, for This Way Out.
Life for LGBTQ people in Malaysia has gotten even worse than we've previously reported. There was a first ever raid on a venerable gay nightclub this week, and the sentencing of two women to potential jail time and canings under Islamic law after they were caught having sex in a parked car. Same-gender sex is a criminal offense in mostly Muslim Malaysia, but each state can also punish Muslims for violations of Islamic law. Equality advocates had hoped that the recent defeat of the rabidly anti-LGBTQ ruling party would mean at least a less vocally anti-queer government. But Malaysia's new deputy health minister has said that LGBTQ people suffer from an organic disorder. The deputy prime minister opposes the idea of recognizing a transgender identity because it would cause chaos in society and has urged all LGBTQ people to stay in the closet. On August 18th, police raided Blue Boy, a nightclub in the nation's capital of Kuala Lumpur that's long been popular with LGBTQ patrons. Officials had for some 30 years largely allowed the club to operate in peace. Local Islamic authorities ordered the 20 men caught up in the raid to undergo counseling for their illicit behavior. And Human Rights Watch this week called for Malaysian authorities to stop the canings of those two women in the northeastern state of Terengganu, calling it the latest blow to Malaysia's LGBT community, which had hoped for better protection under the country's new government.
Some 400 people have reportedly volunteered for so-called gay cure therapy at an anti-queer conference in Ghana called Exploring the Myths Surrounding LGBT Rights. The event, to be held at an undisclosed location in the Northwest African country, is being organized by the National Coalition for Proper Human Sexual Rights and Family Values. Its leader, Moses Fo'amoning, also announced plans to open a holistic sexual therapy unit at a teaching hospital in the capital city, Accra, which, according to the state-owned newspaper, The Daily Graphic, will also attempt to cure queer people of their sexual orientation. Gay sex is currently punishable in Ghana by 3 years in prison. However, Fo'amoning wants to make cure therapy a mandatory part of the sentencing. "We will make our punishment corrective," he said, "instead of punitive." The moves come on the heels of an announcement by Ghana President Nana Akufo-Addo that the government has no authority to overturn anti-queer sex laws, and we will not seek any authority to do so. Speaker of Parliament Aaron Mike Okoye said he would rather resign than allow discussion of pro-LGBTQ legislation. Some see the latest wave of homophobia as a backlash to calls by British Prime Minister Theresa May at a Commonwealth Nations conference earlier this year for member states with laws against same-gender sex to consider repeal. Fo'amoning claims that it was part of a secret Western plan to reduce the continent's population. Ghana is among 37 of the Commonwealth's 53 member nations to still criminalize LGBTQ people.
According to court documents released on August 24th, a lesbian is suing the Hong Kong government for denying her the right to enter into a civil partnership with her female partner. The woman, known only as MK, filed the unprecedented lawsuit in June, but details of the case only emerged during a preliminary hearing at the High Court late this week. Her attorney, Eng Jing Bond, said during a 30-minute hearing that denying the woman's request was unconstitutional and violated the city's basic law and Bill of Rights. "We want legal status for everyone," Eng said, "regardless of their sexual orientation." Hong Kong lawyers said they needed input from all 13 government departments before they could respond. The South China Morning Post reported that Justice Anderson Chow Ka-ming agreed to the extension, saying he expected the case to be heard during the first half of next year. Hong Kong, while part of China, is considered to be a special administrative region of the People's Republic and, as such, enjoys a relative degree of autonomy. The city's only openly gay lawmaker, Raymond Chan Chi-chuen, called the lawsuit a direct challenge to the whole system. The government has no way to escape from studying all levels of policies dealing with same-gender couples in the process, he said. But Michael Vidler, who's litigated other queer rights cases in Hong Kong, worries that the lawsuit may be premature and that successes by same-gender couples in Europe and the Americas might not necessarily work in Asia. "If this challenge fails," he said, "it would set a bad precedent that will take many, many years to overcome."
And finally, a controversial LGBTQ museum in Brazil that was forced to close following an online petition by anti-queer conservatives, has defiantly relocated and reopened to record crowds. The Queer Museo debuted in the southern city of Porto Alegre a year ago and was the first major exhibition dedicated to LGBTQ subject matter in the country. Conservatives accused organizers of promoting pedophilia, bestiality, and blasphemy. Its grand reopening at the private Parque Lagos School of Visual Arts in Rio de Janeiro on August 18th drew unexpectedly large crowds. The exhibition runs for 1 month and features 223 works by 83 artists from around the world. The country's biggest crowdfunding campaign raised some 1 million reals, about $275,000, to cover relocation and related costs. The exhibition is free to the public. Curator Guadencio Fidelis told Agence France-Presse that he's hired 20 security guards and installed extra security cameras to protect people from right-wing protesters. "It is a very important moment for Brazilian democracy," he said, "a convincing demonstration that the most progressive sectors of society will not accept censorship." Fabio Schwarzwald, the visual arts school director, said the exhibition has set a new attendance record. More than 8,000 people came to see the show on its first weekend.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending August 25th, 2018. Written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the new and improved thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Sarah Sweeney.
That's O-M-A-R-O-S-A.
Be very afraid. But first,
I wonder,
who wrote the book of love?
It's who reads the book that's the issue in Lafayette, Louisiana, and Mobile, Alabama, where Drag Queen Story Hour events are being planned at local public libraries. The programs, geared for 3 to 8-year-olds, feature men in drag reading approved picture books and leading other activities. They're intended to teach individuality, diversity, and acceptance. Lafayette Mayor Joel Robideau says he wants to find a way to get the event canceled, but the library is legally beyond the reach of city government. Drag Queen Story Hour supporters turned out en masse for the August 21st Lafayette City Parish Council meeting, but the mayor left the meeting rather than hear the arguments of citizens like Rhonda Kim Gleason.
The origin of the term drag is uncertain. The first recorded use of the term is in reference to actors dressed in women's clothing from 1870. This is not a new phenomenon, and drag is a theatrical form. As a theater nerd who has been very active in the community theater community here in Lafayette for several years, I am friends with lots of people that do drag, whether they be gay or straight, and that doesn't matter. When they go on stage, they are in that persona. And when they get off stage, they are not in that persona. They are not out to corrupt children or indoctrinate them or any of that. The library is for everyone, not just for people who don't like drag queens.
Conservative pastors and the Alabama Tea Party are making a stand against an upcoming Drag Queen Story Hour in Mobile. Although the programs have the backing of the National Association for Library Service to Children, protests are spreading across the country with the help of always subtle InfoWars host Alex Jones.
They dress up like space aliens all over the United States and all over the world. I told you, in horrible demon psychopath outfits that make Pennywise look beautiful. And they show up and they have their way with your children in demon outfits. I mean, if you've got men that look like 400-pound goblin demons with your children, there's nothing you all put up with. There isn't a species on the planet that would let something that looks like a space alien get up close to its kids. But only in America does it happen, and I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it right now.
I realize that I'm not the likeliest candidate for this office. I don't fit the typical pedigree.
Unlikely once, but not at all outlandish by today's standards. Comforting memories later in the program.
Mm-hmm.
two Americans head for Paris in 1955, and This Way Out queer life and literature commentator Janet Mason is thrilled to make the trip with them and their creator, Vanda.
When I heard that the lesbian writer Vanda had a new book out, book three of her Juliana series, I was very excited. You see, I love historic novels, and when a historic novel is written by a lesbian and includes lesbian characters, that makes me very happy. Paris Adrift is the title of Vanda's newest novel, published by Sans Merci Press. And it may be written as a third book in a series, but it can also be read on its own. At the same time, there are allusions to previous circumstances that were in the early novels, and that the reader of the entire series will get. The two main characters, Alice, also known as Al, and Juliana, a famous singer whose career Al is managing, are also lovers. They are from New York City, and when the novel opens in 1955, they are taking an ocean liner to Paris, where Juliana is booked to sing in nightclubs. The tenor of the times, so real that Al and Juliana experience blackmail, reveal to the reader that intense homophobia is as alive and well in Paris as it is in New York. Vanda writes a passage from the point of view of Al that sadly echoes sentiments that I have heard in the not-so-distant past. Of course, Max would have no choice but to fire me. I'd lose all my clients who'd want to be represented by a mentally disturbed, potentially criminal, a natural woman, a thing. I'd lose my gay clients, too, like Marty. It would be too dangerous for him to be represented by me. I'd never work again. At least not in show business or government or civil service. Is there anything left? I'd be poor again, maybe scrapping by in low-level jobs like my father. I'd hate that. I did have savings and stocks, so I could hang on for a while. But my work in cabaret? I must have that. It was my life. Still, I survive it, somehow. But Juliana? She was used to being adored. If it came out that she was... The worst for me would be that this would most likely be the end of us, and that I didn't know how I would live through. The novel takes the reader through history, a factually accurate history, that provides her plenty of interesting asides and insights. But ultimately, it is a love story between these two women, Al and Juliana, and is a tale of how their lesbian love, which must remain hidden, is able to survive. As Vanda writes, "Oh, there have been a few women like us who lived in Paris somewhat openly, women artists who were already considered odd, like Gertrude Stein, Alice B. Toklas. They weren't really accepted by most, merely tolerated. Many others who came here to write or to be artists kept their relationship secret. No, I don't think we'll ever be treated like everybody else. Then let's stay here all day and pretend the rest of the world doesn't exist. She kissed me and we made love again. Everything would have been perfect, except." There has been much written about the importance of telling our stories. For me, as a member of the lesbian community, as someone who recognizes that our stories are so often marginalized and dismissed, the importance of telling our story, especially in a historic novel in a lesbian context, is proof that we do exist and, in fact, have always existed. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, Noah in the Noah's Ark movie and TV series, and you've discovered This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities and those who love them.
This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
Who are you betting on to stop the Trump administration carnage? Special Counsel Robert Mueller? The U.S. Congress? Porn star Stormy Daniels? Internet sensation comedian Randy Rainbow knows who his money's on.
Welcome back. We are joined now by a woman who scares the living shit out of me, former White House aide, reality TV villain, and author of the new book Unhinged, Omarosa Manigault Newman. Omarosa, what a pleasure it is to have you here.
I'm just not buying that.
Well, you got me there. You have been on a media blitz promoting your book and dropping secret recordings that you made during your time in the White House.
This is just the beginning of the type of corruption that's going on in Trump world, and I am here to blow...
Excuse me. I'll do the blowing around here. Now, you've brought with you today a new recording. This is an exclusive, so let's go ahead and have a listen. We warn you that what you're about to hear is extremely stupid.
It's me. Listen, I had no idea they were going to fire you after I told them to. I'm absolutely sick about it. Don't love it at all. But what I really wouldn't love is you flapping your yap all over town about all the crazy shit I say and do. So listen, I'd like to offer you $15,000 a month to shut the hell up and occasionally pick up my dry cleaning. Cool. Thanks, dog.
Okay. What the hell was that?
I saw this as an attempt to buy my silence, to censor me, and to pay me off $15,000 per month.
You say that there are more tapes, even video. You also allege that there is recorded evidence of the president using horrific racial slurs.
Absolutely.
How do you respond, Omarosa, to the questions about your own credibility?
I have been able to verify every single thing that I put in the book, and every single time the Trump people challenge me, I bring the receipts.
We've never paid attention to a word you've said. All that pompous highfalutin gobbledygook. Thought when you got fired your career was dead. Now you're peddling a goddamn book.
A brand new book, and guess who's really shook?
He says that you're a fraud, which is ironic cause he made ya. You say that they hushed you with donations that they paid ya. I think that we may have hit an all-time low. Now our precious country's a reality show. Though you're just a thirsty-ass publicity whore, could you be the hero we've been waiting for?
I am not going anywhere. Donald Trump has met his match.
Oh,
Marosa, you're the worst, but damn, I'm glad you came. Will your sour grapes and secret tapes finally kick his ass at his own game?
It's the art of the deal.
Oh, Marosa, you're a mess, but I'm not mad you're here.
Oh,
if you crush this clown, I'll clean your crown when they make you Woman of the Year.
Oh, Marosa, we know that you're ratchet and mean, but we're ready to make you our queen.
Yes, queen, and when we say,
fine,
we'll buy your book today. We only hope that you'll play your tapes, Omarosa, Omarosa. Press play.
If I need to, I'll do what I have to do to protect myself.
Oh,
Marosa, God, you suck, but go and make that coin.
Make that money, honey.
Money, open up a secret club for your fans, and maybe I will join. I said maybe, oh. My God, I hate you, Omarosa Manigault.
You're a monster.
But your ass I'll kiss, cause now he's pissing his pants and saying, oi, go vault.
He isn't Jewish, but okay.
Though you might be a fraud, every night till I pray to the Lord. That if you heard,
yeah,
him saying the N-word,
huh,
you taped it and that you'll play the tape, Omarosa, Omarosa. That's O-M-A-R-O-S-A.
Believe me, my tapes are much better than theirs.
Omarosa.
Donald Trump has met his match. I am not going anywhere. This is just the beginning.
Randy Rainbow is a total loser. Believe me.
Randy Rainbow's videos are tearing up on YouTube, but you can also find him at randyrainbow.com. Not all that long ago, that fanfare did not set off alarms about what rights might be next on the chopping block. Just a decade ago this week in Denver, Colorado, Senator Barack Obama accepted the Democratic Party's presidential nomination.
America, our work will not be easy. The challenges we face require tough choices. And Democrats, as well as Republicans, will need to cast off the worn-out ideas and politics of the past. For part of what has been lost these past 8 years can't just be measured by lost wages or bigger trade deficits. What has also been lost is our sense of common purpose. And that's what we have to restore. We may not agree on abortion, but surely we can agree on reducing the number of unwanted pregnancies in this country. The reality of gun ownership may be different for hunters in rural Ohio than they are for those plagued by gang violence in Cleveland, but don't tell me we can't uphold the Second Amendment while keeping AK-47s out of the hands of criminals. I know there are differences on same-sex marriage, but surely we can agree that our gay and lesbian brothers and sisters deserve to visit the person they love in a hospital and to live lives free of discrimination. Your passions may fly on immigration, but I don't know anyone who benefits when a mother is separated from her infant child, or an employer undercuts American wages by hiring illegal workers. But this, too, is part of America's promise, the promise of a democracy where we can find the strength and grace to bridge divides and unite in common effort. I know there are those who dismiss such beliefs as happy talk. They claim that our insistence on something larger, something firmer and more honest in our public life is just a Trojan horse for higher taxes and the abandonment of traditional values. And that's to be expected, because if you don't have any fresh ideas, then you use stale tactics to scare voters. If you don't have a record to run on, then you paint your opponent as someone people should run from. You make a big election about small things. And you know what? It's worked before. Because it feeds into the cynicism we all have about government. When Washington doesn't work, all its promises seem empty. If your hopes have been dashed again and again, then it's best to stop hoping and settle for what you already know. I get it. I realize that I'm not the likeliest candidate for this office. I don't fit the typical pedigree, and I haven't spent my career in the halls of Washington. But I stand before you tonight because all across America, something is stirring. What the naysayers don't understand is that this election has never been about me. It's about you. It's about you.
That was then-Senator Barack Obama at the Democratic National Convention, August 28, 2008. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael LeBeau and Sarah Sweeney, produced with Brian DeShazer, from Barry McKay, and from Janet Mason. The Monotones, Randy Rainbow, and Aretha Franklin performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the Estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors who make this program possible. Help keep our 30-year streak going at thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WPKN Bridgeport, Connecticut, KBRP Bisbee, Arizona, 4ZZZ Brisbane, Queensland, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.